You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal, but everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, 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 welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. One of the great privileges that I've had in my career is that some of the folks that I've been able to meet through government service, and now by doing this show with all of you every day, is that some of the people who you come across eventually become friends. And it is especially and deeply humbling when those people are also people whom you admire a great deal. And my next guest, I am very proud and humbled to call not just a friend, but someone who I look to as a mentor and someone who is a thoughtful public servant, honest even when painful, and an all-around great guy. It's a real pleasure, Peter, to have you with me today on my last day in this 2-4 time slot, ladies and gentlemen. I got former Congressman, former Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, Peter Barca. Welcome back to the show, Peter.
Well, great to be with you, Maggie. I'm back at you. It's terrific to be with you once again. I've done the show quite a few times, and it's always very intellectually intriguing and usually pretty vibrant discussions.
Yes.
And now there's more to talk about than maybe in the last 20 years.
Yeah, it is. It seems that I am always breathless, not because or just because of my emotional state, but breathless because it's almost impossible to get through all of the important news of the day, even in 2 hours.
Right.
Peter, I wanted to ask you about Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, whom just said some really bonkers stuff about 9/11. And my take is that Ron Johnson has always been sort of a ready and willing peddler of falsehoods. And Ron's a smart man. You know, I don't think he believes much of this stuff, but Ron knows how to use both techno speak and like the right little nugget of truth to sort of fool the unwitting into believing the big lie, right? And he recently said some stupid things, untrue things, conspiracy theories, if you will, about one of our nation's greatest tragedies, 9/11. Let's take a listen. This conversation that the senator had over a long period of, it was much longer. We've distilled it down to its most essential nugget.
Okay.
So take a listen, Peter.
Because I'm not familiar with
yes,
it.
Yes, so. I love it. We can learn together. Let's take a listen. This is Senator Ron Johnson. I believe this news broke just yesterday.
What would you like to know about September 11th, the official story there, Senator?
Well, start with Building 7. Again, I don't know that you can find structural engineers other than the ones that have the corrupt investigation inside NIST that would say that that thing didn't come down in any other way than a controlled demolition. I mean, you just look at that. You talk about molten steel. Again, you listen to the documentary Bravo 7. There's an awful lot of questions.
An awful lot of questions? A controlled demolition. I mean, what the man's saying, at least by my listen, Peter, and I've listened to the longer cut, it's basically 9/11 was an inside job. Like, somebody meant to do this. The government knew about it. This wasn't a terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm.
What a disgrace to the memory of all those people who died that day. But Ron Johnson's stock and trade seems to have become betray the middle class and betray fundamental... your obligation to tell the truth as an elected official in a way that undermines democracy. I mean, he's a January 6th conspiracy theorist. He's the old mouthwash cures COVID. Mm-hmm. Global warming's good because less Wisconsinites will die. Screw the, you know, states on the coast and anybody, you know, in sub-Saharan Africa. And now this. I mean, when you hear this from someone who holds one of the most powerful positions in all of government, I mean, there's only 100 senators. What is, you're a longtime public servant, Peter. What's your immediate reaction to that, both on an intellectual and just an emotional basis?
Well, it's shocking on so many different levels. I mean, first of all, his implication that NIST somehow jimmied the evidence to cover, you know, to protect this cover-up is just shocking. I mean, I just don't know, you know, what interest, and you know, they would have in doing that. But then secondly, the other thing that's sort of just so puzzling about it is George, you know, W. Bush was president. So as a Republican president, I mean, if you were going to implicate a Democratic president, which he does with great regularity, that would be one thing. So it's hard to understand, like, does he feel like George Bush did this in order to make himself look good, to then stand up for, you know, the American people? I mean, I have no idea what in the world he's trying to
the end game.
Suggest or what the point is of bringing this up. I mean, he obviously must feel that somehow, you know, there was some inside job. It's what he's claiming. But I think it really cries out for, you know, for him to come clean and say, okay, then tell us what it is you suspect and why you think that there was some inside effort here.
And, well, I mean, his claim, just in the clip we heard, and I've heard similar allegations, that, hey, I'm a structural engineer, and I don't think it was possible for this building or that to come down in this way. My response to that as a lawyer, right, is I heard, for example, bite mark experts tell me that they had exact matches based on certain science. I have heard fire marshals tell me, well, this is clearly arson because of this burn pattern. And it was wrong, mm-hmm. right? Like, science isn't completely infallible. And finding one or two, you know, tail of the bell curve structural engineers that provide an opinion that that couldn't happen. When I'm sorry, Ron, what other controlled tests of jet engine fuel based explosions in large towers of nearly 90 stories have you seen? But like,
right. No, that's perfectly expressed, Maggie, because, you know, like you said so articulately, maybe it is the end of the bell curve that something of this would occur. But then again, you know, there aren't a lot of instances where we've been able to study this. Now, granted, you know, science can replicate things correct. In a lab, but, you know, labs are not perfect either because, you know, it doesn't control wind flow. It doesn't control other independent variables that could have come to play here. But to get off the wonkiness side of the equation, I mean, it's like, you know, he must have some theory then of who he thinks is
right.
responsible for this. So he should say who in the world it is. I mean, you know, as you indicated, he's in a very powerful position. There aren't too many people that have been elected to three terms.
And
US
have
Senate.
Access to and people. Then, people often presume, right? You hear a senator or even a crackpot like MTG say certain things, and people assume you're in a better position to know than I am. I right. don't know any structural engineers. I might not know what NIST is. By the way, I think it's the National Institutes of Science and Technology.
That's exactly within, it.
If I'm remembering
That's
my
exactly acronym. That's exactly it. I mean, you've got people who are engineers that, you know, they obviously, as he indicated, came to the conclusion that most people would rightfully come to because, you know, we did in fact find out what terrorists were responsible for this. And
right.
thankfully we got the mastermind of it all. So why he thinks that there was some other inside collaborator on this Building 7, I think he's referring to, I mean, just it defies common sense. So, but even if he does have some theory, then he has a responsibility, not just throw out things like he unfortunately does way too often
yes.
without any evidence, without any, you know, completing the theory and instead just fomenting people's fear and worst instincts that maybe we do have, bad people at play here. And, you know, kind of feeds this whole, you know, deep state theory that there's this deep state of people controlling everything.
Yeah, and their names are like healthy. Pete Hegseth, Samuel Alito,
at
Clarence
this point,
Thomas.
That's right. I mean, sadly, at this point, you know, we've got serious issues here. But nonetheless, you can't, you know, responsibly put things out like that and then not complete the sentence and complete
yes.
where it is you're coming from. I just think it's totally irresponsible, and it's unfortunate.
Folks, we got former congressman and former secretary of the Department of Revenue under Governor Evers, Peter Barker, friend of mine, now a friend of each and every one of you. I'll just say this about Ron Johnson. Everybody knows that friend from, I don't know, high school or college that is the BS artiste of like the highest level, where they drop a couple techno-speak terms and they kind of sound like they know what they're talking about,
mm-hmm.
but because you've known this person for a long time, you're like, nah, they're just full of it. They read something about 5 minutes ago or heard somebody that actually knew what they're, and now they're just spitting it out. Rojo reads like that to me every time I hear him talking, except when Rojo defends all of the tax loopholes and tax breaks for the richest of rich, rich, rich Americans. So I wanted to talk with you about this next, Mr. Peter Barker. That is the influence of money in politics. Let's start with a really simple question, because we got to take care of a little business, then we'll come back on the other side. Here's my question. Peter, if you were a member of Congress or a senator or a governor, would you support a constitutional amendment to declare that money is not speech and that we can regulate the spending of money in political campaigns?
Oh, in a heartbeat. Absolutely. I have in the past. I continue to. I think it's one of the most corrosive effects on, you know, elected, you know, politicians today. And just, you know, they have an inordinate effect. And Citizens United, I believe, is one of the worst decisions ever. But, you know, the irony of Citizens United and Justice Scalia, who wrote, you know, at great length on this opinion, one of the things that he includes, which people forget, and even though I disagree with his decision to be for Citizens United, he also said that what needed to go along with that was complete transparency
yes.
on where the money came from. And we don't have any
of that. Folks, we got former Congressman, Secretary of the Department of Revenue under Governor Evers, Peter Barker. You're going to want to keep it locked. We continue to discuss the actual deep state and the actual swamp that comes from billionaire overlords deciding policy that impacts good middle-class families like yours and mine right here in the state of Wisconsin. Keep it locked. Our great discussion continues. 855-752-4842. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Naughton. I've got a great guest with me to close out this half hour. His name is Peter Barker. He is a former congressperson for this great state of Wisconsin and former secretary of the Department of Revenue, among other roles. He has served the public with great aplomb and integrity for many years. Thanks so much for being here, Peter. We were talking about money in politics. And the fact that every single poll, and more perhaps most importantly for this discussion, polls by very conservative organizations, the Cato Institute, American Enterprise Institute, pick your poison, when they poll, over 85, sometimes over 90% of Americans don't like the level of money in politics, and yet we can't seem to get to a place where elected officials are actively advocating for a constitutional amendment because the Supreme Court declared that money is speech
mm-hmm.
and corporations are people, And so there is this unlimited fire hose of money going into elections. We've seen the most expensive Supreme Court election in our nation's history. How do we fix this? How do we make it better?
Well, I mean, there's a group called End Citizens United. They endorse me because I want End Citizens United. And people need to continue to speak out. I'm glad when they put this on referendums in the most Republican areas, they pass overwhelmingly because people understand that their influence in government is diminished dramatically when you can have these techno, you know, corporations like just control exactly what's going to happen here in America. And it's not in the public interest. And you know, it's worse than it's ever been because, you know, as we said before the break, you know, Justice Scalia, while he was for it, and I'm certainly not, but he at least said, well, at least have to have transparency. We have no transparency. There's all this dark money coming into politics today by these groups you never heard of, like, you know, Citizens for a Better Democracy or Citizens for Change.
Sounds very benign.
Right. And who knows if the, you know, Chinese are funding it, the Russians, the Iranians. We have absolutely no idea where that money's coming from. And you know, we're more vulnerable than ever because people, sadly, are so dependent now on social media for their news, which has no checks and balances and no responsibility behind what they put on the air. I mean, CBS, ABC, any regular station can be sued if they say things that right. are completely false and have been. And but you can put anything you
and
want on Facebook.
And paid settlements, even when what they've said wasn't completely
right,
false or
right,
otherwise constitutionally
right.
protected. Just to give people a flavor, I dare any conservative Trump supporter to call me and make an argument that Donald Trump isn't a guy that revels in people trying to buy influence with him. I mean, that's sort of the Trump brand, right? And if you don't believe me, here's a little recent gut check on this. The Easter egg roll, the White House Easter egg roll had no less than 11 activities. This was just yesterday with corporate sponsors. Can you guess who they were, Peter? The cryptocurrency company Gala hosted a digital egg hunt. Betty Crocker Dessert hosted a cookie decorating station. Paz ran an egg coloring activity, but of course, we got into sponsorship by Amazon and a whole other Google's, YouTube, Meta was sponsoring an AI powered experience and photo opportunity. Yet again, Amazon there. Yeah. Weird. Funny. We're now selling off, little bits and pieces of the old Easter egg hunt. The corruption is real. We all hate it. We got to do something about it. What was the organization that you mentioned, Peter? I want to give that some airtime again.
Oh, and Citizens United. Yep.
Go check that out. Here's another one, folks. Please go check out Master Plan Podcast. The guy who created the podcast, and that's masterplanpodcast.com, was a guest on my show when I was doing the Maggie and the Millionaires segment, and he goes through the entire history from Buckley v. Vallejo all the way through Citizens United. Buckley v. Vallejo was decided in 1976, y'all. It was the first time the Supreme Court was like, man, maybe we can't regulate money in politics. And here's what I will promise every single one of you. If you go check this out, you will be astounded. Since 1976, and then it got worse after the Citizens United decision. Look up, and you could ask your favorite AI bot for a graph plot showing income inequality, union membership, voting participation. Pick a metric. Pick what you think might reflect, hey, is our economy working for most of us most of the time? Pick your metric about, is democracy functioning for us? Whatever it is. And I guarantee you, you will see breaking points at 1976 and after Citizens United that basically show when a Supreme Court, when our system says money equals speech and makes corruption legal in our system, guess what? Our government works in general more often for the betterment of the wealthiest among us. Big shock. The wealthy can buy influence. The government works better for them, less for us. Peter, I
never heard of that podcast, Maggie, but that's
something.
I'm going to check it out.
Check it out. Another one is AmericanPromise.net.
That one I'm aware of.
Yep. That is a good one for listeners. Mm-hmm. We'll put these resources on our show notes. Again, that's End Citizens United. The other one is MasterPlanPodcast.com. The last one is AmericanPromise.net.
Right.
Very briefly, Peter, and I mean very briefly, you're a Harvard graduate. What does the Trump administration's attacks on Harvard and higher education portend for, say, the church people may be attending?
It's huge because, and it's sad. It's really shameful, frankly. And ironically, the whole pretense for this, and I'm not a graduate, though, but I did go to graduate school there. And but Harvard, their chapter of Hillel, which is a global advocacy organization for Jewish college students, and that's the whole pretense for going after
Correct.
Harvard and many of these universities. They said last week on social media, despite positive elements of the government's demands, the current escalating federal assault against Harvard, shuttering political life-saving research, targeting universities' tax exempt standards, and threatening all student visas actually is bad for us. Mm. So, you know.
That's from Hillel, an advocacy, global advocacy, anti-Semitism support for Jewish students within the university structure, saying this ain't good. For
Precisely.
Any institution, if they
Precisely.
Can go after Harvard, which of your businesses, your place of worship, or your other private institutions are next on the hit list? We've got Dr. Marty Kanarek joining us next to talk about the lead paint crisis in MPS schools. You're going to want to keep it locked right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, everybody. We have entered the last half hour in this time slot for the Maggie Dawn Show. Remember to set your watches and calendars. Tomorrow you can find me on this fine radio network starting at 4 p.m. That's where you'll find me every Monday through Friday going forward in that drive time slot. We're going to have some fun, hopefully educate, share some ideas with one another. And I'm really happy to have my final guest for my time slot today. None other than Dr. Marty Kanarek, who is an expert in epidemiology, teaches about air pollution, human health, and environmental health at Wisconsin's flagship university, the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is a professor of population health sciences and environmental studies. He received his PhD in epidemiology from the University of California at Berkeley and his master's in public health and environmental health from the University of Minnesota. He worked for the U.S. EPA in its infancy, I'll say, from 1972 to 1978 before coming to Wisconsin. This man knows of whence he speaks, and he's going to share some of that knowledge with each and every one of you. Thank you so much, Dr. Kanarek, for joining us today. Let's just jump right into the lead problem that we're seeing in public schools. Is this something that is isolated to large urban school systems, or is this something that parents need to be paying attention to regardless of where their children may be attending school?
Thank you for the great introduction. It's great to be here. Lead is a toxic problem in every urban area where there are old houses that have old lead paint in them. Lead is a, you know, we talk about different environmental substances and how bad they are, but lead, the effect of lead on the brains of kids is the best researched thing we have in our field. It said lead makes the mind go away. So this incident in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Public Schools, is serious because it's lead. But we've been fighting the war against lead for 100 years. And in many ways, we've done a great job. You know, there are thousands and thousands of old houses in each inner city, and we're trying to get rid of the lead in them. And it's just, and we've lowered the lead levels from dust, from the old paint, and we've taken out lead pipes, and we've removed lead from gasoline. but our research has shown there's no safe level of lead. So we've lowered our level of concern. So in Milwaukee schools, the level of lead they found is probably 20 years ago, we would have said that's no problem. But our research now shows that it is a problem.
Folks, that's Dr. Marty Kanarek from the University of Wisconsin Madison, professor of population health sciences and environmental studies. So if a parent has a child that's attending a school that was built prior to 1978 and they've got a concern about lead, what's your advice to them, Dr. Marty? Is it sufficient to do annual blood tests when they go in for their physical with their pediatricians? If a parent is extraordinarily concerned, what would you recommend to help put parents' minds at ease?
Well, it is that go to their doctor. And once a year, the doctor should do a finger prick test. It's very simple. It hardly even hurts. They put a lollipop right quickly into the kid's mouth. And it's a little capillary tube of blood, and they get any lab in many places can do a test. If they're concerned right now, if there's those seven schools, if the parents are concerned, they can get a blood test at their doctor's office's lab, a finger prick test. If they don't know where to go to get the test, the local health department will help. So getting a test is what we recommend for blood lead.
Yeah, and to keep getting those tests to monitor it, especially because lead's bad for any of us at any age. But as you were explaining, Dr. Kanarek, it is worse and potentially life-altering in terms of cognition and brain development for kids who are exposed to any level of lead. So be on top of that. I wanted to expand our focus a bit, Dr. Kanarek, and ask you generally to speak to people who I think in good faith, perhaps under or misinformed, are challenged and are concerned about vaccination protocols, just the general approach to vaccinations and some of the information that's out there, their safety and efficacy, especially when it comes to kids. Obviously, we've had an administration change, a lot of different change in focus. When you're speaking, if there's a parent listening right now that is trying to weigh the pros and cons of complying with a physician, the AMA recommended vaccination schedule for their newborn infant and their other small children, what's your message to them, Dr. Kanarek, as they weigh that decision?
Vaccines are totally safe and totally important. The kids should get their MMR vaccines, measles, mumps, rubella vaccines. The idea of vaccines being dangerous is it's been investigated all over the world by scientists, and the vaccines are totally not only safe, but important to keep your kids healthy.
So critical. If people are challenged by that and they are looking for different kinds of information, one of the concerns I've heard expressed to people is, gee whiz, I used to go to the Centers for Disease Control website and feel confident in reading the information presented there. As a researcher, Dr. Kanarek, as a scientist, if people are looking and read, they're seeing things on social media about vaccinations, they're hearing from people who may be famous because they see them in the news every day. Where do you recommend, Dr. Marty, for people to go to test or to check up on some of the things that they may hear alleged or stated on social media or from other sources about particular vaccines or other
environmental toxins?
Exactly. Thank you.
I mean, traditionally, we would go to the Centers for Disease Control site, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency site. If you're having, in this new era of government, if you're worried about them, I would go to the Mayo Clinic site, the Cleveland Clinic site. I mean, they are not affected by government shutdowns and stuff. So there are those legitimate medical sites. If you want to learn about lead or vaccines, Mayo Clinic is always accurate.
Mayo Clinic right in our backyard here. Our neighbors in Minnesota to our west here. Is it a good idea for people to try to consume or understand actual published medical literature or other scientific studies?
Well, that's a tough thing to do. We teach medical students and graduate students how to decide what's the difference between a good study and a bad study. That's pretty tough. So it's nice if we can have some authority sites that we really trust. I looked up lead on the Centers for Disease Control site, and it's totally accurate today. So I hope it doesn't change. And I didn't look up vaccines,
yeah.
But it talks about all the neurodevelopmental effects on children and the ways to prevent and all the different exposure pathways and the ways to prevent them in children and to give your kids good calcium and iron foods. And it's a totally accurate site for lead exposure anyway.
Does it remain a good option for people to ask their family physicians, to ask, to reach out to research institutions or places like, again, Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic? Is it okay to give them a call? Will they be able to direct people to the right places? Is, again, talking to your family physician, does that remain a good source for people to go to?
That should be, yes. They get these same questions over and over, so they do their homework. And if you trust them, I would trust their knowledge. I would definitely would do that. I trust my internist. He does his homework.
Yes, as do I. That is one area of expertise I have not a whit. Folks, we've got Dr. Marty Kanarek from the University of Wisconsin at Madison. He's a professor of population health sciences and environmental sciences. We've been talking primarily about lead and its risk to young children, given the challenges that we've seen in the Milwaukee public school system with lead exposures in at least 7 of their school buildings that were built before 1978.
It seems like this is an extraordinarily bad event, but remember Flint, Michigan, 2015, the water supply, we always discover new places where lead is and kids are being exposed. Now, the Milwaukee Health Department and the state of Wisconsin have been fighting the war on lead, getting it out of old houses, getting it out of gasoline, getting it out of paint, getting it out of the soil, remediating windows. They've been doing a great job. We've lowered the levels that kids are exposed to in lead. That we found it in these schools, and apparently they didn't do a great job with cleaning it up and having the kids go back into the schools. That was a mistake. But we have, it's a strange thing where we're winning the war against lead, but then we still have to fight the war against lead. We've lowered the amount of kids exposed to lead and the amount they're exposed to, but we can't give up because we know there's no safe level.
What I hear you saying, Dr. Kanarek, is we can feel confident that our understandings and the remediation that has happened both locally and nationwide on a state and local and federal level has been very effective in lowering the aggregate or total overall risk that lead poses. But we still need to be vigilant as to our own individual children, but not panic, to inform ourselves, to test our kids, to be aware of our surroundings and take reasonable precautions. Is that a fair way of summarizing what you've said, Dr. Marty?
That's fair. And of all the pollutants you hear about that might affect kids' brains, lead is the one. I mean, mercury is the second. But, we hear about other chemicals and the research on that is still, questionable or debatable. But lead is really bad for kids' brains. So being concerned is really a good thing.
Thanks so much for that. And smacks of such common sense and intentionality and deliberateness, Dr. Marty. I think it's good that we all remind ourselves to proceed reasonably and not in a panic state. I wanted to ask you just very generally as we wind up this segment, Dr. Marty, when we look at the impacts of climate change on overall human wellness and folks and our families' wellness in this state of Wisconsin. Can you help people put the dots together? Because this is a place where I've heard a lot of people say, maybe one of our senators say, well, climate change is good for Wisconsin because fewer people will die from the cold. Can you just give us a sense of how this actually fits together?
Climate change or global warming, it is not good for anybody. We all have children. We're all going to have children and grandchildren, and we want them to live in a world that is livable, that where we don't have malaria in Wisconsin, which we will soon have, that the earth will change. The earth will be here, but I don't know how inhabitable it'll be for people if we keep on disregarding climate change and not stopping fossil fuels and converting to sustainable energy, change our whole energy system. The health effects of climate change are going to be real.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Dr. Marty. I would love to have you come back and talk more, maybe even walk through some of the basic pillars in your foundational class, Introduction to Environmental Health, so that we can understand that better. A big thank you to Dr. Marty Kanarek, Professor of Population Health Sciences and Environmental Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Happy Earth Day. Happy Earth Week to you, Dr. Marty.
Happy Earth Day. Thank you.
We'll be back with some final thoughts. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Folks, just a wee trip down memory lane, if you will indulge me for a moment. This is a pretty big change for me and all of you coming up tomorrow. I'm going to be moving to the 4-6 drive time slot. And I wanted to just give some thanks and appreciation to everyone that I have worked with and the folks, especially who put me on air way back in the day, which was in 2018. Back in 2018, if you're new to the show, I was Corporation Counsel for Milwaukee County. And in March, I sued the opioid manufacturers and distributors for the harm that they caused to Milwaukee taxpayers by killing our friends and relatives, coworkers, family members, neighbors. That lawsuit has to date generated north of $250 million in total payouts over the next some 16 years to Milwaukee County. It's the single largest set of settlements ever recovered by a local government in Wisconsin history. It was history-making when the lawsuit was filed. And as a result, my colleague Earl Ingram, who hosted his last regular morning show program this morning, asked me to come on his radio show. And if you've been listening to me for a few minutes or a few times, you know this gal can talk. You know thyself. I like to gab. And Earl brought me on to his show, and we got along extraordinarily well, had a great discussion. We went beyond the wrongdoing, the criminality of Purdue Pharma, the Sackler family, and so many others in the opioid and pharmaceutical industry, and went into other political topics. And the dot between that moment and today has been a blur, though it counts now nearly 7 years. And so I want to say, firstly, thank you to Earl Ingram, who was the first person that ever interviewed me on the radio. And I think Earl's connection to the city of Milwaukee, his willingness to reach out to leaders and people that work in government and in advocacy organizations whose names you don't often see in the paper or ever see in the paper is extraordinary. And he continues and will continue to do that kind of work for civic media in a new role. I look forward to watching and continuing to listen to Mr. Earl Ingram. I also want to give thanks to Mike Crute, who ultimately gave me my own show on what eventually morphed into civic media. And he gave me that show back in 2018. I did that for nearly 2 years. Wasn't a lot of radio, about 2 hours a week. Seemed like a ton back then with my other full-time job, 2 hours a week. And I ended my program back then because going into the 2020 election, I thought, this might get a little dicey. And since I've got my full-time job, I'm going to focus just on that, and glad I did. I oversaw Milwaukee County's defense of multiple lawsuits related to the 2020 election, oversaw the recount, and ultimately the successful defense of the Milwaukee County Election Board's management of that recount when challenged by the Donald Trump campaign. I closed out my public service for Milwaukee County in March of 2024, and that is when I came full-time back to civic media. I had begun doing a daily 6 to 7 p.m. radio show on civic media in 2023, and it was perhaps my young childhood dream come true, careful what you wish for, to get a two-hour show every day in a daily slot here with civic media. It has been an incredible ride since then. And I just want to say thank you again to Earl, to Mike, to Dominic, who I did a lot of appearances with, who kept this new time slot going, and that I will inherit come tomorrow. But most of all, I wanted to say thank you to Sage Weil, our CEO here at Civic Media, and each and every individual that has worked with me on this program. This program is intense. I am intense. I care a lot about the topics that we cover. I hope that comes through on the air every day. And so supporting this show and making investments in this show to make it the best it can be is intense work because of how we do this. So I want to say thank you to all my colleagues and everyone that has worked to produce this program, including my senior producer, Jamie Martinson, Calvin, who's been on the board with me, Jacob, who's coming in, Jess P.S., who has given great support over time, Aaron Zommers, Sam Davidson, Luke Mathers, Corey Hartman, Chris Casper, and all of you folks at Civic Media who have worked to put me into a position where I may hope to be successful in a new time slot with each and every one of our incredible listeners. But most of all, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you listening and watching. I wouldn't be doing this if you weren't there. I hope that you find both value, cause for alarm, and every day a bit of cause for hope. We have all of these things every day. Our challenge as Americans, as friends, as neighbors, as coworkers, is to hold complicated thoughts, sometimes that are in conflict, in our head at the same time. I'll do my best every day to make the complicated more accessible, to make the politics and the policy more personal. I care about you, and you have my commitment as we continue this journey together to tell the truth the best that I know it, to stand up to bullies, and to stand together to make it better for the vast majority of us. Folks, that's going to do it for me. I'll be back tomorrow on the 4 o'clock slot. You got Matt Rothschild with fresh new content coming up next to close out the 4 to 6 p.m. slot today. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.